What is up, NBA fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet, presented by OGGBasketball.com. Your host, Nick Faye, with me as always, Corey Waldron, and special guest, Jake Christian. And today we are talking breaking news, Jimmy Butler to Philly. What is up, fellas?
Hey, hey, how's it going?
This is this made me have a lunch break today. This is why I'm on a lunch break. This right here. Well,
I could not interrupted my lunch.
Yeah, right?
And funny enough, Corey and I have been talking. We're like, oh, yeah, you know, we're not going to record a pod this weekend. He's like, unless Jimmy Butler's traded. And we've been saying that for like the last, you know, five weeks. And then what happens? Jimmy Butler's traded. And to give the details of the trade, you know, obviously Philly's acquiring Jimmy Butler, Justin Patton. Minnesota's getting Robert Covington, Jared Bayless, Dario Saric, and a second round pick. Bayless probably is going to be waived. You know, it's unsure at the moment right now. What were your initial reactions to this trade? What were your thoughts on it?
It's ironic that that Shams broke the news, because I was going to make a cheesy Sham Wow joke, because like you say, and one of the staffers, I forget who it was, at OTG just tweeted this morning that Jimmy increasingly with his play is becoming untradeable. And he's, you know, despite the soreness he's having so far this season, and I think that's partly just for not coming to training camp, he's really been showing his worth as a player on the court. So, you know, I thought we were all approaching that deadline where, yeah, Minnesota may just make this work for the year and see what happens in the offseason. But needless to say, when I saw this pop up on my notifications, I was surprised just like everyone else.
Yeah, it's funny. I got the Sham notification, and then Nick texted me saying Butler trading coming, and then the Waj tweet came through. So my lock screen was just, you know, all Jimmy Butler. And I have my phone on Do Not Disturb. So it happened to be one of like the perfect timing in which I checked my phone too. I guess I had a sixth sense. I knew this was coming.
I guess, but, so.
Yeah, but it was definitely surprising. Maybe more so because it kind of seemed like Philly had fallen out of these the talks with any wing. I mean, obviously they were in the Kawhi talks early. They really didn't seem interested in Jimmy Butler most of the time. And then, of course, you know, now they make the move. And for me, it makes sense. It had to be done if you're Philly. Even though I kind of think they lost some depth, you have to stack stars in this league right now, and they stacked a star.
Go ahead. Corey was just preaching my sermon there. I saw a tweet last night from our buddy Jack Manuel on Twitter after a very huge Brooklyn win. And I know he was feeling himself and the buzz was going crazy. But Jack tweeted something along the lines of, you know, don't mess with the team. This is a good young core we have. We don't need to go chase free agents. And I love Jack. He's my brother from another mother. But you need stars in this league, man. And I know those guys are developing. I know Jack's point was don't sell the farm for a bad deal. But you need headliners in this league. And I think Jimmy, despite a lot of shade, I think, this season, showed himself to be a star. At the very least, he's a top 15 player. I would hear top 12 in this league. He's shown himself to be a very valuable asset. So if you can get a guy like that, you got to get him. I mean, this isn't Gonzaga. This isn't college basketball. You need stars to make the NBA go around.
Yeah, and it's nice to see Philly pull the trigger. And then, like Corey kind of mentioned, some of the struggles, it's like, all right, we need to get a star in here. We need to make a move. They did lose Covington and Saric. Saric really hasn't been playing well this year. And, you know, they didn't really give up any big pieces, any, you know, first-round picks or anything like that. So they're still pretty good in place, and they're going to be able to attract free agents. You know, the talk is that they're already working on trying to get Butler to sign a long-term deal with them over the summer. So that's obviously something to keep an eye on. Where does this put Philly in your eyes in the Eastern Conference now? Obviously, they were behind Toronto. They were behind Boston. You know, some would argue they're behind the Bucks and the Pacers. Now, where do they stand?
They're coming back. I think sorry, Corey, I didn't step on you.
Go ahead. You're good.
Like Corey was making the point a second ago, we kind of haven't been talking about Philly, partly, I think, because Toronto's just red hot, and that team's making sense. Partly because Milwaukee, for me anyway, came out of nowhere. Oh, my God, I didn't think Budenholzer would make such a difference. But that team looked really good against Golden State the other day. So I think those two forces and that Philly just hadn't got out of the gates. There have been some great flashes here and there with Embiid and Simmons individually, but I think collectively it hadn't been there as a team. The Fultz train, and maybe that's something we'll talk about here in a second, that just still hasn't looked like the right fit. So I think it puts them back in the mix, but ironically, like you were mentioning Nick, Milwaukee looks good, Toronto looks good. And so I think it goes from a splash that we're contending a move to just, like, we want to keep pace with the Torontos and the Milwaukees and even the Bostons once they right the ship in the Eastern Conference.
Come on, Jay. I've been talking about the Bucks all offseason. Where were you? no, but I've said this to Nick. I think in the East, you know, it was kind of Boston, Toronto, and the Bucks have been in this separate tier in the East. And then in that next tier, you had, you know, the Sixers, the Pacers, you know, early you could throw in like the Pistons. And now getting Jimmy Butler, I think you can push Philly into that top tier in the East. They've, in my eyes, they're a home court favorite team now. They pushed the Pacers out of that, even though I think the Pacers may have a more complete team and they have more depth. That's like the one issue I see with Philly's roster now is just their depth is questionable, but they have three stars. You know, you have Ben Simmons, the point guard, you have the monster that is Joel Embiid, and now you have this two-way star in Jimmy Butler. So I think it pushes them ahead into probably a favorite to be home court in the first round. But I don't think this pushes them to be, you know, like the team that's going to run the East by any means because the bench is still questionable. And we still like Markelle Fultz. I mean, what is he going to be now in this new system? Jimmy Butler may hate him really quickly.
Well, that's a good point. That's what I was going to ask you guys. Now, Butler's going to a situation where you got a young wing, and I don't think anybody would say Simmons and Wiggins are the same player. You got a young, promising big, similar with, you know, which you have with Cat. How do you think the mentality of their two young stars in Philly will vibe with a guy who I call a Stacks, a Steven Jackson all-star, just a real dude who will get up in your face, likes competition, but is going to push you a little bit. How do you think the Philly youngsters will respond to Jimmy Butler?
I think one thing for Philly, their young players are already better, and they're already, you know, more in a winning vibe. And I think Embiid would be a guy, you know, we haven't really seen him get into it with teammates or anything, but he's a guy that I feel like is already one of the best centers in the NBA. And I don't think he would be afraid to kind of argue with Jimmy Butler. And I think that would just add another element of toughness to that team.
Definitely going to be tougher. Definitely going to be a lot tougher and grittier. I mean,
I would say, sorry to cut you off. I would just say one last thing is I would be more concerned about the Fultz relationship. Maybe Jimmy Butler could actually help him. I'm not really that concerned with Simmons and Embiid. I'm more concerned about Markelle Fultz and Jimmy Butler if there was any type of, like, you know, problem in the locker room or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, this team still, like, this doesn't address their issue of perimeter shooting. If anything, this hurt their perimeter shooting. Even though Jimmy Butler has been better the last couple of years. You know, Covington's a good 3-and-D guy. Sargic was struggling. Of course, he had the big game against the Pacers and gets traded. Like, why couldn't this be a little bit before? But, you know, they still kind of have a lot of holes. But, yeah, I think I'd be more worried about Jimmy Butler versus Fultz than thinking he's going to be stepping on Ben Simmons or Embiid's toe, especially because those guys, at least from the outside, play extremely hard, which is one of his issues with the guys in Minnesota.
Sure.
And I would say this puts them in more of a win now mode where I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some other trades happen. We mentioned Kyle Korver a lot already. Now it seems more likely to add more spacing. Like Corey said, Jimmy Butler's shooting 37% from three this year, but it's not like he's known as a spot up shooter. He's more of a guy who's going to get in there and get you a bucket. But I also think that's what the Sixers need because when Embiid's not out there, they were having trouble finding baskets.
Right. Ooh, and I like if Korver's on the move. I like that. It's silly, but yeah, if you're getting,
I think a lot of teams right in this middle level are going to be calling, asking for Kyle Korver. The Thunder, I could even see maybe the Rockets just because they want more shooting, possibly. Then of course the Sixers. So there's going to be a lot of teams calling for Korver.
LA
for sure. Yeah,
LeBron calling up for his boy. But looking at it from like the Philly side, we mentioned, you know, now they're not quite, you know, I don't think they're at the level of Toronto or Boston yet. They still have to put everything together and they probably have to add those other pieces. But do you think long-term this is going to really work out now looking at the situation? You know, Jimmy Butler is going to be a free agent. You're most likely going to max him out. That's going to come out to around 5 years, 38 mil a year. You'll be paying him that till he's 34. Do you think there's some risk to this move?
Yes, but I this could be, you know, I'm a old millennial, I guess, according to how the birth charts work. So I remember a time when basketball was a little different, just in the sense, like, you know, all you young kids and these analytics and these pieces and the process, I get it. It all sounds pretty, right? And like Barkley says, it's a way to get nerds into basketball who otherwise wouldn't get into basketball. I totally get it. Totally understand. And all that data makes sense, right? But I go back to OKC and my son seeing a graphic of the Thunder with Harden, Westbrook, and Durant. And he's like, holy shit, they're all on the same team. He didn't say holy shit because he was nine, but he was amazed, you know, that the team had that many players, three MVPs on the same team, and they went to the finals one time. Cleveland is going to be in basketball purgatory for the next 40 years unless another kid is born in Northeast Ohio. If you have chances to get better, you do it. And I think if you get a championship from it, great. Philadelphia, we talked about 76ers, right? They're still dining out on a 1983 championship that they got in part because Dr. J needed help. So who they trade for? Moses Malone, and that's the faux 1983 Philadelphia 76ers. So will they be paying Jimmy Butler $40 million on the back end and probably have to move his contract when he's 34, and will we rag on him for being washed like they're doing with Carmelo now? Of course, that's how this thing works. But if you have a chance to be good, there's only so much processing that can go on, to borrow a phrase. That's part of the reason Hinkie doesn't have a job right now. These things aren't necessarily just pieces and assets that you move. These are real, tangible people and players. And if you have a chance to get a good one, man, you get them and you just live with the consequences, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously there's always risk because he's going to be a free agent, right? But the thought is you put him alongside two young studs, the opposite of what he had with Wiggins and Towns. I mean, if you compare Embiid and Towns, Embiid is, you know, head and shoulders probably above Towns as a complete player. You know, he plays defense. He plays, I mean, last night against the Hornets, he was, you know, as best we've seen so far this season.
42.
Yeah, completely dominated. What, 18 rebounds too? Or I know he had a high total in rebounds as well.
I think either 17.
Yeah, he just dominates. Right, he just dominates. You know, we see these pictures and photos of Towns, you know, not getting through defenders. You know, Embiid gets through anybody he wants for the most part. And then Ben Simmons is a stud. So I think you take the risk because also, you know, being out east, obviously the Celtics are the one team you're looking at chasing, and you think, okay, you know, this is the one team that's put together for some years. The Raptors, you look at, you go, well, this team could be good this year, but who knows if Kawhi stays. Then you look at some of the other teams. So if you're Jimmy Butler, you're thinking, well, let's see what I got with Embiid and Simmons. And if they play this thing out, if they can make the playoffs, I think they got to make the second round for him to stay. But if they get into the second round and they're, you know, a tough 6-7 game, you know, out in the second round with these two guys, I think he'll want to stay because it's the Eastern Conference too, which is the lesser of the conferences. And he's got two guys who are still young, note that, and will probably get better. And he's, you know, right around the prime of his career, maybe on the decline after the knee injury. He still looks fine. But I think if you're Philly, you take the chance because, as we mentioned to start off this pod, it's about how many stars you have in this league at this point in time, and they added a star.
Now, obviously, super hot, super early. What do you predict to happen for this Philly team, you know, come playoff time? Obviously, a lot's going to change. Like we mentioned, there could be more trades. But looking at them now and the whole Eastern Conference, are they a second round now? Are they good for the Eastern Conference Finals? What are you thinking?
Well, I'm going to go listen to some more episodes of Full Access Hoops to make sure I get the full scouting report on the Milwaukee Bucks.
it's but, actually on the NBA outlet.
there you go. That's it again. But I think if Philly puts it together, and they got plenty of time to do so. We're just now in November, so a lot of basketball will be played. I could easily see a scenario where Philly's in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Toronto Raptors. Ceiling is the ceiling, I'd say, for them. I think the floor is probably second round loss or conference semifinal loss to either the mighty Milwaukee Bucks or the Boston Celtics. But ceiling, I see them in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, I'm going to say they're bouncing the second round. But again, you know, now that these guys are out, I think two guys to really look at, aside from Jimmy Butler coming in, would be Landry Shamit.
Shamit, yeah.
And I knew I was going to mess that up. And Wilson Chandler, who's just coming back from injury. How these two guys, what their role becomes in the future with Butler coming in, will probably determine if I think they can make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. But I think right now they are for sure a lock to be in the second round. Because I think, realistically, I would have this team as a 4 seed and the Pacers as a 5 seed. And I think just because of the star power on this Philly team, I think they would probably beat the Pacers in a 7 or 6 game series.
Yeah, I like second round for them for sure. I think there's a possibility for Eastern Conference Finals. I think also you mentioned, you know, Landry Schmidt and Wilson Chandler. I also think Mike Muscala is somebody to keep an eye on, too. I know he was just elbowed in the face by one of his teammates, got 6 stitches. But when he comes back, I think that's another guy. They need some depth. And like we said, they could probably make a move or two. Now, flipping it over to the Minnesota side, you know, picking up Robert Covington, Dario Saric, and like we mentioned, Jared Bayless, probably a buyout in a second-round pick. Where does this put Minnesota? You know, obviously losing a player like Butler is going to hurt, but they did get 2 solid pieces in Covington and Saric.
So I wrote an article not too long ago about the story being what happens. This is when I thought Jimmy Butler was going to be traded. Like you guys say, we've been on trade watch for what seems like forever now. But I wrote an article for OTG a few weeks back about the story to me being, you know, what happens with Karl-Anthony Towns, right? Sort of this legacy of Minnesota of, you know, the draft gods being favorable for you, and you end up with these franchise players. You saw it with Kevin Garnett, and then you saw it later with Kevin Love. In both cases, in Kevin Garnett's case, there was some success making all the way to the Western Conference Finals. Love, I don't think they're ever better than 500 as a ball club. And then both those guys eventually moved on. And so Karl-Anthony Towns is the man now. He has the team. So I guess the question is, what happens next? I see Minnesota, you know, quite frankly, slipping back to that sort of Western Conference purgatory where they're not bad enough for the lottery and they got a bloated salary, but they're not quite good enough to break into that upper echelon. They might squeak into the playoffs, but I think you're looking at a scenario that will probably play out the same way it did with Kevin Love and Kevin Garnett over time.
Yeah, I mean, I actually like this move for Minnesota. I mean, for the point that we don't have to worry about Towns not getting shots now. I think this kind of solidifies that this offense will be through those two guys because Covington and Saric, they're role players. I mean, they're good role players. I mean, they're starters on most teams, but these aren't guys who are going to demand touches, demand usage. You know, Covington's really a 3-and-D guy, true through and through. Saric can do a little bit more. Obviously, he's had a cold start. But I think this is perfect for the guys you want to grow, which is Wiggins and Towns. And then, of course, over the last, you know, three games, Derrick Rose has tricked everybody. Not tricked. He's played as if he's going to be a big piece for this team going forward, at least in either the starting rotation or until Jeff T comes back and be the sixth man for this team. But, you know, they got some defenders. They got a couple guys who can shoot. I just think these are better complements to Towns and Wiggins, who you still want to build this team around. With Butler, you know, Butler's, you know, in a sense, an alpha compared to those guys. And none of them would challenge him. And I don't think any of these guys in Star Trek or Covington is going to challenge Cat for that number one option on the team, which I think is going to be good for them going forward. Do I think they're a playoff team? I mean, I'm not going to say they're not. They're probably still right on the cusp of somewhere between that 7 and 10 seed range just because of how the West is. But I think this is actually a better move for them going forward.
I think long-term it's probably a better move. Like this season, obviously, I don't think it's going to really help them a lot. Jimmy Butler is a really good player, like Jay mentioned, probably top 15. You know, you can make an argument for up to top 12. I think Covington and Saric, like you said, are a better fit chemistry-wise. Also, long-term-wise, I know Saric's not very old. I think Covington's like 27. You have Covington locked up for the next three more years after this at 12 mil. And then you got Saric on his rookie deal still. So you kind of got the rights to him when he becomes a restricted free agent. So if everything works out, now your franchise is kind of set up. You still have that ugly ass Andrew Wiggins contract, but everything else is kind of in sync. And I think moving forward will be nice, and it'll be interesting to see how everything works out. And this is an opportunity for Cat to take that next level. Like Jay talked about, people working out in Minnesota, I think a lot of pressure is on Cat to be that guy. And if he can take that next step, we'll know a lot more about him this season.
Yeah, I'm skeptical though, man. Well, I'm skeptical at this point. I have a question for guys. Maybe we open up and discuss it this way. Corey, you touched on something. You said, well, you know, the chemistry and the vibe wasn't there. And Jimmy's definitely an alpha, and I think he's from that school of Kobe Bryant, Chris Paul sort of leadership, right? Like, we're gonna thrive in adversity and confrontation, right? Does it concern you at all from a, I guess, sports psychology standpoint that, you know, Jimmy went head-to-head with Cat, went head-to-head with Wiggins, called him out, like, I mean, literally called him out, and he, you know, gets shipped away. And now you have new guys coming in. You say, okay, now we're looking to Cat, you know, the max money guy as the alpha. Do you think there's any problem when the alpha got poked in the chest by another alpha? I mean, he didn't win that battle. They just removed the problem from him being Cat. Like, he didn't win that confrontation and go head to head with Jimmy and prevail and make himself the alpha of that team. they just got rid of Jimmy. Does that concern you at all from a leadership standpoint, well, or you know?
I think so.
I think so to a degree. Now, this is what I'll say about that. So, I mean, first, I mean, him losing with to a bunch of third stringers and Jimmy Butler, I think that will forever be the greatest thing I've ever seen. Just imagining Butler truly proving he's an alpha by doing stuff like that. But I don't want to say it necessarily hurts him to a great degree. I think if they had played out this entire season, let's say, with Jimmy Butler there, knowing everything that we know now, and Butler was there for the duration of a season, and then you went this route, then I think it would be more damaging to the Cat than it is now, only being a few weeks in. Because obviously, yeah, Cat didn't win this head-to-head battle. They chose to get rid of Jimmy. But what that does say is, though, that they believe in Cat to be an alpha, right? I think that's what you would have to, or at least have to tell yourself, maybe.
Right.
And, you know, you did just lock up Towns prior to the season long term, which I think also is a sentiment of them saying you're the alpha. I mean, I don't think any of his teammates will go against him being, you know, that big dog on the team. I'm not too concerned about that narrative.
I think that there's reason to be concerned, but Cat can bounce back this season and prove everybody wrong if he steps up and he's that lead guy. And I don't know if he's necessarily that alpha as a leader on your team. You know, we see teams where the best player isn't always the leader of that team, and then maybe they need somebody else. I think a lot of the problem in Minnesota in general is the culture, you know, the coaching, the front office, just everything is a mess there. You know, you made this trade, you know, you don't make the playoff, you have good reason to clean house. Now you have young pieces in place. You can kind of set everything up moving forward and really set the tone, because I just think the way everything unfolded in Minnesota and came public and the whole Jimmy Butler situation, it was so like everybody knew everything. That's just an ugly look for the franchise. And I think you need to really clean your house up and then worry about it next season. I think this year is a big year for Cat bouncing back and proving he can earn that contract. He can be that number one player. Like I said, I don't think he has to be that alpha leader. He needs to be that alpha player on the floor, being the best player on this team.
And I think, you know, at times you can have like in this, you know, Cat can be an alpha and Butler could have been an alpha too. Like they're both alphas, but like, you know, when you're both on the same team, someone has to like bend normally, you know, like for example, that first year in Miami, it felt like LeBron and Wade were both trying to be the alphas of that team. LeBron may have been more passive that first year. And then they realized, all right, you got to be the leader of this team, and I got to take a sidestep. With Butler and Towns, it just felt like Towns wanted to be that guy, and Butler was like, no, I am this guy. You have to learn your place. And that's where it kind of, you know, fell apart.
So, see, that's what – so I don't know. So those are two good examples, right? So that's a good example with the Miami and the Dwayne Wade and LeBron James, because, yeah, they were both, okay, so you go, I go that first year. And then I think Dwayne Wade, more so than LeBron, had to have a come-to-Jesus moment and say, look, this guy's the best player on the planet. And he kind of seeded that ground, even though, you know, he's – you know, Wade County, you know, Miami, yada, yada, yada. But LeBron was the best player. I think the bumping head thing is, it kind of reminds me more of Kobe and Shaq in the sense, and I hate to do the Kobe Stan thing, but it's like, one, Kobe would never want to trade a good player just because they weren't getting along. He's like, no, let's stay here and let's make this happen. As Kobe was ascending, Shaq was like, learn your place. You got to know your place. And Kobe's like, no, 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 screw that. I I'm taking my seat at the table. And he met Shaq's force, with his play and just, you know, just the maniacal person that he is in terms of determination and his will to win. I don't know. I don't know. I feel like they bump, and then, you know, Jimmy's like, one of you guys are going to pee sitting down, and Wiggins and Carl Towns both did. And I don't know if you win. Like, it's like, okay, you put, you know, you took Jimmy out of Gin Pop, but okay, did you really win now that he's in solitary? I mean, I don't know.
I like that analogy. That's a good one.
Like, yeah, the guard got him, but yeah, did you really win? Like, I don't know. It's just, and all that, like you say, I think is the point is made, Nick. Like, yeah, if he plays well and it's done, you know, it's kind of, it's all water under the bridge, and we probably make too much of these because, you like to say, guys, some guys are really good leaders. Because we always rag on guys in the NBA, the sort of Dante Jones of the world that are like, the vocal leaders, but are playing like 2.2 minutes a game. They're like, get out of here, dude. So yeah, sometimes that leadership thing's a little overrated. I just thought the dynamics of that was interesting, is all. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, if he plays well, then it won't matter what we think of Cat as a leader anyway. So
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's obviously a big year, and there's still like a lot to be proved because he hasn't played well this season, really. He's been inconsistent. Same thing for Wiggins. Now there's really no excuses for them. Jimmy Butler's not there to take shots. You have a chance to step up and see how far this team can go. Before we get out of here, what are your final thoughts on what we'll see from the Timberwolves this year? No playoffs, around what seed, if they do make it or don't make it?
I think they're out, man. I think LA will figure it out. I think they'll move a piece or two. The whole Northwest Division would ironically say for the Timberwolves will probably be in the playoffs. You got Golden State. I think Houston will figure it out. San Antonio looks good. I mean, that's just basically eight teams right there off the top of my head without even thinking about it, without even mentioning the Pelicans or the Clippers. So I just think I know it's early, God, it's not even Thanksgiving. The Cat just looks inconsistent right now. Wiggins, I mean, that's the thing plaguing him is inconsistency. Tibbs is somehow still mismanaging minutes, I think, with his guys. I mean, kind of reverting to old habits. And I just think Minnesota will be on the outside looking in this year.
Yeah, I didn't have Minnesota in the playoffs to begin with, I don't believe. Or I had them as an 8 seed. I think there's still hope because the season is so damn young. But I don't think this team is going to make the playoffs. And I don't hope anyone gets hurt. I just feel like there's someone who's going to get hurt. The bench is still pretty bad. I mean, their starting lineup looks nice, but this is still a bench that's very bad. Mm-hmm. And they are out west. You know, they're already, 4-9. It's not like these guys are going to have a lot of chemistry to start either. I think this is probably going to be a team, that remains on the outside looking in. They may get above 500, but I think they're going to be a team that misses out.
Yeah, I would agree. I think they're going to miss the playoffs. I think their depth, though, is probably a little bit improved now, adding these two guys. You know, one of them's probably either going to come to the bench or you're going to, boost Taj Gibson to the bench or something like that. So I like for Minnesota moving forward with the pieces they have. I just don't think this year they'll be able to capitalize it. And final thoughts, who won the trade or was it an even deal, considering, the drama from Jimmy Butler and whatnot?
I went to public high school, so I keep it simple. Whoever got the best player won the trade, so I say it's okay.
I'm actually going to say that this is a wash.
Corey.
I'm sorry. How about this? I'll give the Sixers a B+ on the deal, and I'll give the Timberwolves a B on the deal. I'll give the Sixers a slight edge because they did get, as you mentioned, Jay, the better player in the deal. But I think long-term-wise, big picture-wise, I think the Timberwolves ended up having a very good deal as well.
Yeah, I hate to do it, but I'll probably call it a wash too, just for the fact that Jimmy Butler has to get paid. I will say Minnesota, to give them a negative mark on the deal, would be that they should have took the Josh Richardson trade from Miami because he's better than both they got. Yeah. So I think you could call it a negative trade for Minnesota for not pulling the trigger early. But I think for Philly perspective is they didn't really give anybody up that was like huge to them. Long-term plans, they gave up some role players for a star. The only thing that I'm concerned about, like I mentioned before, Jimmy Butler paid $38 million, for the next 5 years. And obviously Corey mentioned the knee issues and obviously the high minutes from Tibbs. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. But any last thoughts on it, guys?
The NBA is fantastic, man.
But hopefully I can eat dinner today in peace. But that's about it, guys. As always, thank everybody for listening. Jay, thanks for hopping on. Always fun talking hoops with you. Corey, check us out. iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. Also, check out OTG for a ton of great NBA content. Also, the NBA, it'll be dropping another pod today, too. So
plugs, plugs, and plugs. Peace out, Netflix.